It's the Sound Checkerson Show, starring Mr. Sound Checkerson! I can keep going. Hello, America, how are you? Are you sitting there in your comfortable living room sets from Rooms to Go? How about it? I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Welcome to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. I feel like I said that earlier. No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
I'm so confused. And welcome once again to another edition of the best movie of all time. But for Nick's sake, I'm willing to bend on this and do as we did with The Marine and declare this the best worst movie of all time. Give it a slash.
Yeah.
Because I love this movie, but I'm willing to admit that it's just kind of terrible.
It is. Just terrible.
As you can tell from the acoustics, we have returned to Nick's room at his new place, where there still isn't any carpeting, so there's still a lot of echoes. The acoustics are still bouncing off the walls. Dancing on the ceiling!
Don't know that song.
It's a Lionel Richie song. Anyway, we come to you today with a real barn burner of a picture. They burned a barn with this movie. They took a bunch of copies of the DVD and lit a barn on fire.
I wish they had.
No, they didn't. Anyway, this is from 1997... We're scrolling up, Nick. Let's get this going. From 1997, co-directed by Shuki Levy and David Winning, this is Turbo, a Power Rangers movie. You have nothing to say.
It's terrible.
Okay, let me go ahead and preface this. Here's the thing about this movie versus the original Power Rangers movie. I want to say, I gotta explain this first. Nick, I really wish I had recorded the episode on the first movie with you.
Right.
I think we've established that I feel like that episode was tainted. And I feel bad that we wasted it on the person we did. But we got to watch this with you, and you hated it!
Well, I didn't hate it. I just felt it was... Like, once it got into the actual Power Rangers stuff, like... 25 minutes before the movie was over, it became mindlessly enjoyable in that way that Power Rangers is, but when you had to suffer through the plot...
Yeah, the exposition
and all the
weirdness
forever. Before all of that, it is one of the most painfully, like, horrible movies ever.
And I don't remember it taking this long in the past times I've watched it.
And it is... How long is it? 100 minutes.
And it felt like... 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it was just excruciatingly slow-moving and, like, ugh.
Let me post-face that and preface everything else we're going to say by saying I love this movie. Mainly because I just love Power Rangers as a property, you know.
Right.
I love the first movie, but who doesn't love the first movie? It's fantastic. We've already covered it on this show. Enough talk about my past rivalries. Let's talk about this picture. Turbo, a Power Rangers movie, came out in April of 97. That's right? April 97? March of 97.
Yes.
I saw it in the theater the day it came out.
Of course you did.
And this was actually... This movie was sort of intended to bridge the gap between seasons 4 and 5 of the show. 4, which was the one season of Power Rangers Zeo, and 5, which of course was the one season of Power Rangers Turbo. The only iteration of Power Rangers to get multiple seasons was the original with Mighty Morphin, and it had 3 seasons. Everything else since has only had 1 season to do its business.
So they are just the same show rather than spin-off shows?
No.
Then how come you can say Turbo or whatever is season 4 when it's really its own show?
I will explain. I'm so excited I get to talk about this. Oh, I'm dancing. Kind of. Anyway, no. The first 6 seasons of this show... are the same story. It goes Mighty Morphin, 3 seasons of Mighty Morphin, 1 season of Zeo, 1 season of Turbo, and 1 season of In Space. Mm-hmm. In Space, which is fantastic, and it's all the same saga. I feel no remorse about spoiling anything here. At the conclusion of In Space, The Red Ranger of In Space, his name is Andros. He is commanded and forced to destroy Zordon's energy tube, because destroying Zordon's energy tube spreads out like all this good energy that, you know, destroys all the evil in the universe. Except for the little bit of evil that was left to make the other 15-odd seasons that have been on since. Because after In Space, there was Lost Galaxy. I'm going to see if I can... I'm sorry, it's a nervous tick. I'm trying to... I'm diddling my peen. No, I'm not. I'm scraping a name tag on the desk. Anyway, no reaction to diddling my peen?
Just a weird way of putting it.
Yep, it certainly is. Anyway, I'm going to try to do this in the correct order, and I've never really tried to do this in a public forum, but I'm going to give it a shot. Three seasons of Mighty Morphin, one of Zeo, everything else after this one season. Zeo, Turbo, In Space, Lost Galaxy, Lightspeed Rescue, Time Force, Wild Force, Ninja Storm, Mystic Force, Dino Thunder, SPD... RPM? Oh, shit. Can we get a count on this, Nick?
What are you looking for?
I'm trying to think of all the American versions.
Of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Yes.
Gosh, we gotta look up the list. Television series...
There we go, let's see. Did I get it right?
I don't know.
I got it up to Mystic Force. I'm pretty proud of myself. Operation Overdrive, Jungle Fury, and Power Rangers RPM... And Power Rangers Samurai, how about that? Power Rangers RPM was originally announced to be the final season of the show, and the folks at Nickelodeon have bought the rights, and now they're about to do another season as Power Rangers Samurai, apparently. Well, how about that? That's an interesting drawing of the Wild Force Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about this movie, though. Let's stop letting me be a nerd, and let's talk about this movie.
Okay.
As I said, this movie bridges the gap between the second iteration, the fourth season of the original saga, Zeo, and the fifth, which is Turbo, this being Turbo, a Power Rangers movie.
Right.
oh, you're looking him up.
I am.
Let's talk about cast before we start talking about that little pecker. Let's do this.
Ooh.
Ah!
That's frightening. Keeping this up for now. Okay.
Great, that's horrifying.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, let's...
Cast!
In credits order, complete, awaiting verification. Let's go to the IMDb, or the Wikipedia page for this one. There we go. In order as they have it here, we have the great Jason David Frank as Tommy Oliver. Most people's favorite Power Ranger.
Not my favorite Power Ranger.
Who did you love?
I don't remember.
Wasn't
him.
My favorite was Billy, which I...
Probably my favorite also.
Which makes me happy, considering he grew up to be gay.
Yeah, he grew up to be.
And I love my gays. So I was very happy about it.
There's an article somewhere about evidently, like, filming that show was, like...
The worst part of his life?
The worst part of his life. Yeah. They were just constantly belittling him for it.
It was the early 90s and everybody was a dick.
Yeah.
that's the way that was. He's the Red Turbo Ranger. I'm going to explain. I'm going to nerd out again. Most people know Tommy as being...
The White Ranger
or the Green Ranger. After Mighty Morphin, they did Zeo, and a lot of people's colors shifted. He became the Red Ranger. Adam, who was the Black Ranger, became the Green Ranger. Rocky became the Blue Ranger. Cat became the Pink Ranger. Well, still, Cat and Tanya stayed the same. They were still pink and yellow. But and Tanya, who replaced Aisha, who went to Africa to live with a tribe, and she used to be in the tribe, but she was also once a child, and then she became a teenager, like, as a part of a magic spell. It's a whole thing that does not even have anything to... Holy shit! have anything to do with this movie. Oh, God. Just, yeah. Alright, can we go back to the damn list? Instead of staring at this horrifying thing? We'll tell you about this thing in a minute.
Yeah.
Second build, we have Johnny Yong Bosch as Adam Park, the Green Ranger. Johnny Yong Bosch, who I think we mentioned probably in the Mighty Morphin episode, has gone on to do a lot of anime voices, most notably the voice of the lead character in Trigun, Bash the Stampede.
One of my favorite anime.
It's one of mine as well. It's not that I have favorite animes. I mean, my favorite anime is FLCL, or Fooly Cooly, as some people call it. I've bounced back and forth. I've never decided which one I want to call it. But the point is, I haven't seen a lot of anime, but what I've seen has been, like, Fooly Cooly, Trigun.
The better ones.
The better ones, yeah. And I love Trigun. What I saw of it, I enjoyed quite heavily. I'm so sorry. I'm going to explain to the listeners what's happening. There is a name tag on Nick's desk from my dear cousin, Stephanie C. Kernison, host of Media Monkeys and Junkie Junkie. Subscribe now, her birthday party. It's got a drawing of a guitar and musical notes on it. He's got it stuck to his desk, and I, like a nervous bastard, keep picking at it, and I apologize. I'm gonna put your wallet on top of it.
So you can't see it?
Exactly.
But alright, continue.
That was fascinating. But that's Adam, that's Johnny Young Bosch. Third build, you have this kind of look of, like, glee on your face now.
I thought you were going to talk about, like, continuing your anime discussion.
I mean, there isn't much to say. Like, my anime experience is very limited. But what I've seen... it's lucky that the things that I've seen, the vast majority of things I've seen have been things that I've enjoyed.
Right.
Fooly Cooly, Trigun. I've seen a little bit of Fushigi Yugi, but it's such a long thing, and we never... It was me and Stephanie C. Kernison, host of Media Monkeys and Junkie Hosts right now. We started to watch it 4 years ago and never finished. But watched it just long enough for me to have a classic Jeff line that I won't explain here because you kind of have to be there.
Right.
That'd be bad podcasting. But then again, when have we been good? What? Anyway, third bill in this picture, we have Catherine Sutherland, Australian lady, as Catherine Hilliard, or Cat. She's the Pink Ranger. And has been. She was the Pink Ranger from about the third season of Mighty Morphin on through to the midway point of Turbo. I should mention how, like, these people's tenures. So, of course, we mentioned Jason David Frank. Johnny Young Bosch, who was a member of a team from the second season of the Mighty Morphin. Yes, second season. He was actually in the first movie, of course, as the Black Ranger, and on through to the middle of Turbo. This is fascinating, I'm sure. Tanya Sloan, played by Nakia Burrise. She joined the cast in Zeo, so she was a member of the team for about a season and a half as the Yellow Ranger. We have... Introducing Blake Foster as Justin Stewart, the Turbo Blue Ranger, who was thankfully only around for one season. He's a child who gets to be a Power Ranger because the old folks at the thing, if I can speak English, the old folks. That was great podcasting. The folks. At the production company said, you know, we need a child.
No, we don't.
To connect with the kids. And we're going to make it that the kid grows into adult size and then still speaks in a child's voice, because that's not at all creepy.
And they're still doing that, though. I mean, I keep telling people whenever I talk about Power Rangers, I just, a couple weeks ago, month ago, 2 months ago, whatever, however long, recently, saw the latest incarnation from Japan. And they're still doing that, have a little kid be some, for some reason, part of the Power Rangers team, just so that, like, the kiddies have, like, a character of their own age.
And does he grow to adult size when he transforms?
He doesn't transform, he's just sort of there.
Oh. Well, I mean, there have been, like, kid characters randomly thrown in. I mean, there was the kid in the first movie.
Yeah, I don't remember much of the first movie, except that it had Ivan Ooze in it.
Ivan Ooze was awesome. The first movie, like, I'm gonna go ahead and say this now, even though we're not done with cast. We were talking about this, you know, earlier. The first movie is very much an American film. You know, it's not... It doesn't use any of the stock footage, and they change a lot of the canon of the show, and they have the different suits, the more movie-friendly suits with, like, mm-hmm. the armor and stuff. It's very much an American production. As I said, because this one is canon with the show... it utilizes a lot of the same, like, transformation sequences. It uses the same, you know, horrible set for when the Zord is fighting the giant monster of the week. You know, it's the same thing. This was also the only movie of the two that really, really had, like, heavy Saban involvement. Saban was the production company that brought it to American television.
Yeah.
As most people know. But let's get back to the cast. Supporting characters, we have Jason Lee Scott. Oh, I wish I had given him a better introduction, but let's keep going. Jason Lee Scott, played by Austin St. John, a returning cast member from the original series. A pair of cameos, actually, by returning cast members from the original series. He was a ranger for the first 1.5 seasons of Mighty Morphin, and then came back shortly in Zeo to be the Gold Zeo Ranger. for a short time. So actually, him coming back for this movie wasn't as much of a drop in, you know, a fall, you know, as it was for the next person in our cast, Amy Jo Johnson, who reprises the role of Kimberly Hart. She had gone on to, I mean, not do anything really, but she hadn't done anything terrible either. And she comes back, and I mean, you put it yourself. I mean, it's all about the money. They came back for some pay. I'm sure they did. But I have to say,
Austin St. John seems to have
gained weight.
Do other things for money in addition.
He did do some gay porn. It's common knowledge at this point. Austin St. John did a little gay porn in his time. Not like professionally, and not like on a recurring basis. Just like I think he did maybe one movie. but he's also put on weight, and it's kind of sad.
Sprinkle some fries on those cupcakes!
Finally, in our cast of humans, basically, we have Rocky DeSantos, played by Steve Cardenas. Rocky replaced Jason as the Red Ranger in Mighty Morphin, and he was a ranger from the second half of the second season of Mighty Morphin onto this movie, where he just stopped being a ranger, and the last time you see him is in the pilot of Turbo, where he just kind of says goodbye, and we never see him again.
They just
kind of throw him away. Which is sad, because Rocky was one of the more tolerable people to be a part of this show, in the history of the show. He was very charming. We also have a couple of cameos in terms of villains. We have a cameo by Rita Repulsa and Lord Zedd from the original series. I don't know who plays them in the film, but...
I think it's probably the same people.
I'm fairly certain it is, but it's always nice to see them. Do we have the... There we go.
Edwin Neal as Lord Zedd, even though he doesn't have a speaking line, so I guess it doesn't matter. And Carla Perez as Rita Repulsa.
Yeah, that's the same folks. So, nice to see them riding Serpentera and sleeping in their weird bedroom as they're married, you know. As a person who watches this show and as a person who likes to think about creepy things like this, you know, I often wonder, you know, Lord Zedd is just musculature with some vague armor on. You have to wonder what his whole body looks like.
Ugh.
And you don't want to. That's why we move on. There's not much else to mention in terms of cast. We should mention our main villain of the picture, Divatox, who has been played by two actresses in the history of the Power Rangers canon. In this film, she's played by, what did it say on the IMDb there?
Hillary Shepherd.
Hillary Shepherd, later Hillary Shepherd Turner, after she married someone with the last name Turner. she was Divatox for the movie, and for a fair amount of the TV show, and then she was replaced on the TV show. Just click the character Divatox and see who else has played her. Divatox played by... Oh, Carol Hoyt was the other actress who played her. And, she, of course, the character carried over from the movie into the TV show. It's not like the first movie. As I said, it's a very American production. The first movie isn't canon. You know, you never see Ivan Ooze in the TV show. Very sad.
He was pretty cool.
He's awesome. But you know, but this is definitely, like I said, this is canon. This is, consider this the X-Files Fight the Future.
Right.
Of the Power Rangers universe, if you must.
We should probably mention these fellows.
We should. Also making cameos, not cameos, because they're part of the world. We have Greg Bullock as Lieutenant Jerome Stone. Lieutenant Stone is a character. He's a local policeman in Angel Grove who... I think he starts showing up in the third season of Mighty Morphin, and he takes Vulcan Skull on. Vulcan Skull, once again, played by Paul Schreier and Jason Narvi, respectively. Wonderful fellows. I'll tell a story about them in a minute, but they join like the junior police force, like they're kind of you know ROTC basically, but for cops at Angel Grove High. And then in the fourth season, Zeo, after they've... That's the weird thing about this, is that Vulcan Skull, I think they quietly drop out of high school, but they would never say it because it's a kid's show and they don't want to encourage people to drop out of school, but you never see them in school after about the halfway point of Zeo. Like, they just, you never see them. They're always off at the private detective agency that Lieutenant Stone opens up after he gets fired from the police force. And in this movie, they've all been reinstated. And I think Vulcan Skull are actually official cops at this point. So that's the thing that happens. Vulcan Skull. Bulk, who is responsible for the one moment in this movie that we rewound and watched again.
I mean, I'm not sure we should even talk about that much. I mean, how can you describe it? Except it's just a moment where he makes a weird face and a weird noise happens.
It's because they use that same classic, like, you know the Vulcan Skull theme, right? Can you hear it in your head?
No.
it's always this, like, womp, womp, ba-da-da-da, ba-da. It sounds like if Polka and someone with a ratchet had a baby, and just, like, that's their music. And they always had this kind of weird, like, synthesized sound that was like, bah! I can't even do it with my mouth, but you know the sound. We watched that clip twice as Bulk made that smile, like, nah. That was funny to us. There's a scene. Watch the movie. You'll enjoy it. What should we do from now? We've talked about the cast.
Should we talk about the non-existent plot? Oh.
You always joke about that. You always say non-existent plot. There is a plot here. Oh, shit. No, there is one more person we've got to mention. We have John Simantin?
Simantin.
Simantin as the voice of a great wizard with both of the first letters of those words capitalized. Larigo. Jesus Christ, that picture is horrifying.
Larigo is, like, the beginning of the movie starts with a text scrolling up the screen like Star Wars, only there aren't any stars in the background, so it looks really low budget.
There were stars in the first movie that used the same device to explain Power Rangers to, like, a general audience.
It's too creepy to look at. I'm changing.
Yeah, you better.
Yeah. Anyway, and it's like, there's a great wizard who knows how to open a gateway to a demon, so the evil space pirate Divatox is after him, blah. But first he must escape from his planet, and then it cuts to this planet, and there's this guy with a crossbow, and he's like, I have you now, wizard.
No, let me do this. Because I used to, for some reason, love the way he says wizard. I've got you now, wizard.
Shoot a crossbow through the woods, and you see that the great wizard is, in fact, the creepiest looking thing you've ever seen.
Imagine a combination of the leprechaun and horror.
Ewoks.
Yeah,
Ewoks
you said
and leprechauns with a dash of, like, orangutan, like, baboon or something.
There's some semi into it, and there's humanity.
There's some human to it, also.
It's just a horrible genetic experiment.
Gone wrong, and he can't speak. He only makes weird noises.
Oh, no. He sounds kind of like Consuela, the maid from Family Guy. You know, we were talking about Consuela while we were watching the movie, but now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, he has the same voice.
Basically. Only
No, Mr. Griffin, no. What do you need? I need more lemon pledge.
You need more lemon. I never found her funny.
You need more lemon pledge?
Yeah, no more lemon pledge.
Why don't you just buy it yourself?
No. Hey, no, Mr. Superman not home.
Offensive! Let's keep going. I didn't write it. It's Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane should have known better than to have such a boring character be recurring on that show.
I don't think she's boring.
I hate her. She's so interesting to me. But anyway, yeah. So, he's horrifying. And he escapes from his planet with his magic wand, which he had with him the whole time.
Yeah.
So he could have escaped whenever, but I think the filmmakers were just like, we need a chase scene to establish that he's in danger.
Yeah.
So he teleports to Earth, and Zordon's like, yeah, you should probably go find him. So they go.
Do you want to recount the entire plot, Nick? Is that what you're trying to do?
Do you feel... I mean...
I don't know. I don't want to recount the whole plot. I'll just say this. Larigo, Divatox wants to use him to open a portal through the Nemesis Triangle, which is this Stargate-looking, like, half-water wall thing that they have to cross through in a ship.
And her ultimate goal is to open the portal to summon the demon.
Malagor. She's going to marry him and then have all the power in the galaxy. And then get all the gold? I'll be honest, the plot doesn't make sense. You're absolutely right, Nick. This plot makes absolutely no sense. Compared to the first movie, this makes no fucking sense. Ivan News, you knew exactly what he was doing the whole time. He wanted the adults of Angel Grove to dig up his ectomorphic titans and then launch themselves off the cliff. You know, that was a pretty simple plot. And then there's, you know, Dulcea with her, you know, loincloth bikini and her staff and, you know, the Tengu warriors and bad puns and They Might Be Giants is on the soundtrack and burn and there's like big battles. First time you see CGI Zords and then they kick him in the dick and that's the end of the movie. Not here.
No.
And I love how you just watched me with such fascination as I explained that entire thing to the kids.
Yeah. So they make it to the island eventually after a lot of unnecessary stuff happens, such as a fight with Stegosaurus monsters on a pirate ship.
I think they're actually supposed to be more hewn to snapping turtles.
Well, they have Stegosaurus plate spike things on their backs.
Oh, so. And they do. They absolutely do. Pods that she drops into the water and then somehow leap onto the boat.
Or they pick them up, but we don't see them picking them up.
We
so
don't.
We just sort of assume they kind of make it onto the boat somehow. And the least interesting action scene of them fighting the monsters follows, and yeah, then they go to the
ship, and they go through the thing, and they go back.
They go and they go to the island, and
we don't have
they
to
summon the
Nick.
Demon, and they
Nick.
Fight the demon, and they win, and they save the day.
And then they go to a karate competition.
For no reason.
And then the music starts.
And then the credits. The credits are the best part of the movie, because nothing's happening during them. And it's over.
Yeah. I will say that I definitely didn't enjoy this as much as I have in the past, you know?
Any reason for that? Like, did I suck the joy out of the
No,
room?
Actually. It's just a matter of the fact that, yeah, I mean, compared to the first movie, this isn't that great. And the fact that, I don't know, like, I gotta say, I will not lie. I don't mean to be a purist. I don't mean to be a nerd. No, actually, I mean completely to be a nerd. Turbo has, like, the weakest origin story of any of the iterations, I feel. Because, as you saw, they literally just come up with it themselves. Which is horseshit. Like, the beauty part of Mighty Morphin, Zeo, even in space, everything, like, was created, you know, thousands of years ago for some ancient purpose, you know? Mighty Morphin was created thousands of years ago by Zordon when he was still on Eltar, his home planet.
I like that you know that.
I know a lot of stuff, and I'll tell you why, and I don't mind talking about this on the air now. I've been writing what can only be described as a spec script. I mean, some would call it fanfic. I call it a spec script. It's actually not a spec script. It's a spec treatment. For a film version of Power Rangers in the style of Transformers. But I don't mean that and that I want it to be terrible. I love the first Transformers. To say it's terrible. I mean that in a way that I want to take the idea of Power Rangers and modernize it. You know, make it something that... Like we talked about all the different iterations of, see Dark Specter. We talked about all the different iterations of Power Rangers, but the one that I most wanted to note is one that like kind of knew how stupid it is was Power Rangers SPD, Space Patrol Delta, which I forget which number of version it was, but it was not too long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And it was so self-aware. It so knew that it was, you know, 2006 and Power Rangers was ridiculous and that it was ridiculous and made light of it on a pretty constant basis. Like, SPD was fantastic. SPD and Dino Thunder, which came before it, those two shows were made for people that were in their 20s still watching the show. I mean, I haven't watched it through and through. I stopped after In Space, didn't watch it for years. Watch Dino Thunder because they brought Tommy back as their Zordon, basically. And then I watched SPD because it came on after and enjoyed the crap out of it, too. And then stopped because after that was Mystic Force and they gave them capes. They don't need capes! Horseshit! No capes! I don't mean to take an Edna Mode stance, but seriously, no capes!
I like that that's the thing that you got really angry over. They gave them capes. Like, out of all the ridiculous things that happen on this show... The capes are the thing that bother you the most.
It's true. I'm just like, Power Rangers don't need capes. They're in the weird spandex bodysuits that somehow are armor.
All right.
Which is
here comes something. What is your favorite part of this movie? Since we've basically been talking about how horrible it is for half an hour.
It's not horrible. This is why I had to put it in the best, worst category, is because it's not the worst movie of all time. We've watched the worst movie of all time, and it's called Speed Racer and Undead or Alive. This is still... There's something to be gleaned from this. There's something enjoyable about this. And my favorite part of this movie? Oh, God.
It's like the movie... To me, I didn't really find it that enjoyable until they actually became the Power Rangers.
I mean, that's certainly...
Really close to the end of the movie. Like, they didn't even have a fight with, like... The putties or anything at the beginning.
They had the friggin' Stegosaurus turtle monsters.
Yeah, they weren't even Power Rangers there, though. They were just sort of, like, there. But, like, the beginning of the movie was almost like... I felt like I should have been on drugs while watching it because it was all about Larigo. And him, like, walking around with chimps for no reason, and like and like this weird music playing on the soundtrack, and them just being in Africa for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, it started so weirdly.
But then we learned to have fun, though, because we started discussing the great Brian Posehn.
Yeah, we should probably explain Brian Posehn.
We were talking about Larigo and just looking at his face and thinking, instead of all that weird, you know, oh, Mr. Griffin, instead of all that shit, it should have been Brian Posehn doing his usual... It was actually, no, we started talking about that, and then we started talking about Chris Hardwick's impression of Brian Posehn, which is just, like, saying everything in a really, like, disturbed nerd grunt. So literally every time Larigo appeared on screen from that point on, you could hear me and Nick, I'm sure, just go... And this went on for the entirety of the picture. And it was quite fun, I gotta tell you. So yes, Brian Posehn saves the day again.
Without even having to be involved in the movie.
No, he saved Undead or Alive. No, he didn't save Undead or Alive. He was nice in it. He was enjoyable.
Nothing could save Undead or Alive.
Nothing can kill the Grimace. I do apologize about that. I didn't.
Well, that's kind of my fault.
I didn't do that.
Not screwing in this.
A handle is flopping on Nick's desk. I'm telling you, this has got to be the most fascinating episode we've ever recorded for our listeners. Oh, the name tag on the desk. Oh, the handle on the door is falling off. I'm driving in my car and listening to this. I'm entertained.
How about that Malagor?
I was playing a role of a listener. Malagor. Yeah, let's talk about Malagor. Malagor, who kind of gets about as much screen time as Two-Face in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad. It's sad both times. Malagor, as we mentioned, is the demon that Divatox wants to marry to have, like, supreme power in the universe. And he's basically... Like the creature from the Black Lagoon, if he were coated in molten rock and lava and could shoot electricity out of his claws.
And had incredible fangs. Because the creature from the Black Lagoon is kind of like a fish, so he's got a big gaping fish mouth.
That's true. This thing
Malagor has fangs.
Massive
yeah.
fangs. The design for Malagor, I will defend the design of Malagor. At least the first time you see him when he first crawls up out of the lava pit, like, there's something about him that I kind of dig. Then once he steps outside and the battle starts, he's not as impressive. Also, the battle lasts all of, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
For all this... For how much this movie belabors, like, getting to the point, the battle with Malagor is so underwhelming.
It really is.
I love Malagor, but it's just, like, it doesn't go on long enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, over the matter of, like, Malagor... What does Malagor do? Oh, yeah, Malagor shoots fire out of his palm... at the Turbo Megazord, and the fire kind of spreads around them, and then they're like, you know what we gotta do, guys? And they get the shield and the sword, and they turn on the rocket boosters, and they go jamming at him and slash him once, and he falls off a cliff, and
he explodes.
And he explodes.
I kind of want to hear your little explanation of the reuse of Malagor in later incarnations of the show.
I will. Malagor, I mean, and you can look up the picture of Malagor, unless we use the picture of Malagor for the Almar for this episode, I don't know. But if I didn't, you can find Malagor on, just type in Malagor on Google Images, and you'll find him. But you can also type in Dark Spectre and see the same character. Dark Spectre is a character that's introduced in Power Rangers in Space that is intended to represent basically the Power Rangers universe version of the devil.
The first
evil, basically, yeah, and he's like the supreme evil in all the universe. And they just use the same costume and character design as Malagor, but they just sit him in space like he's Galactus from Silver Surfer. That's basically what happens with Dark Spectre. In Space is so fucking awesome. I'm going to take a moment to extol the virtues of In Space, because In Space was the shit. In Space was so fucking dark and so, like I almost want to lead this into a discussion of Lost Galaxy, which is basically just if Starship Troopers and Power Rangers had a baby. It really is. But no, In Space, I mean, it's the end of the saga. The finale of In Space, which is entitled Countdown to Destruction, is widely regarded as one of the best episodes of the entire Power Rangers franchise, because it's so dark and just so, like, you feel it. If you watch the show long enough, the Countdown to Destruction means a great deal to a lot of people, and it means a lot to me, because it's the end of an era, you know.
Right.
After Countdown to Destruction, after In Space, they just started doing this one season a year crap where it's just like one different iteration that has nothing to do with Zordon or the original Power Rangers. It's just all, and I realize that it's just because they've taken the Japanese mythology and they've changed it to our American shows, and that the Americans have, you know, put their own mythologies and spin on it. So maybe Zordon wouldn't be involved. But I debate quite often whether or not I would wish the whole franchise would have just ended after In Space, or if I'm glad it kept going. And I still haven't figured that out, because I didn't care for Lost Galaxy when it first originally aired, but years later, when they were airing reruns of it on ABC Family, I watched all of Lost Galaxy and fucking loved it, because it too was also ridiculously dark. You're looking up Countdown to Destruction.
It's a two-parter.
It is a fucking two-parter. It is it's an epic, sir. It is fantastic.
I'm thinking of trying to find it. I mean, for someone who doesn't know the show like you do, though, would it mean the same thing? Like, would you still like it? Or do people like it so much because it reflects across the entire mythology that you've come to love after watching, like, the entire thing?
I don't think you could watch it just individually. I think you have... I mean, I'll say this. Let's say, perchance, you watched everything except for Countdown to Destruction over the course of your life. Mm-hmm. And then 20 years pass. Even then, you could watch Countdown to Destruction. But because you didn't watch... And you told me you only watched Mighty Morphin, never watched Zeo, never watched Turbo, never watched In Space. And I don't think it'll have the same punch with you. In addition, not just because it doesn't just conclude the saga, obviously it concludes In Space, so there's all the storylines involved with that that you wouldn't understand what was going on, and they tie those together, and you know, it's definitely a finale to end all, and then they just kept going. They really shouldn't have. See, I said that just then, but I can't decide. I realize this episode has devolved into a discussion of my love of Power Rangers, but...
Well, I mean, there's not really much to talk about as far as the movie's concerned.
This is true. I mean, I'll be honest, Nick, and this shows some questionability to my character, but honestly, the main reason why I wanted to cover Turbo on the air is just to kind of reverse the juju of covering Mighty Morphin with the person I did.
Right.
Because I really wish I hadn't. You know, I feel bad because I've wasted 5 episodes now on, you know, kind of unworthy people. And I feel bad about it. You know, these are episodes that I can never listen to again. Like, emotionally, I can't handle it, you know. Actually, I will be honest. Recently, I kind of started to not feel so bad about the 3 earlier ones that I can't listen to.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons that you would understand. You were there. But... But still, it's, you know, I felt bad that, you know, the superior Power Rangers movie, you would agree. You know, I feel like I wasted on kind of someone unworthy. I think me and you could have had a cracking good time with
Power Rangers the movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in years.
It's so great. Like I said, it's, you know, it's certainly the one that holds up more. And even you had never even heard of Turbo. I mean, you've probably heard of the show, but you probably didn't even know the movie existed.
No. My Power Rangers experience was limited to elementary school. I didn't watch it after that.
You gave up before CEO?
I don't think I gave up. Maybe I sort of grew out of it.
I just didn't.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that, like, you didn't grow up. But
I mean,
you know what I mean.
You are a year older. I guess that does change something.
Maybe.
But yeah, Countdown to Destruction, you're looking at the Wikipedia page.
I'm not going to read the plot.
I know, but I'm just saying it fills me with so much, like, wonderful memories and... Gosh, Countdown to Destruction is such a great episode. Google.com.
Google. Yeah.
Oh, did you get a porn Twitter follower?
I didn't.
Oh. That happens from time to time. It's like the porn friend request on MySpace. Hey, remember when MySpace was a thing? Anyway.
I still use MySpace. I use it mainly just to change my name to, like, weird things. Like,
right
now is Fess Weiss.
Honey Dipper Dan. My name is Fess Weiss.
What does that even mean, Fess Weiss?
It's just his name. We're referring to the Honey Dipper Dan sketch from Mad TV, which you can find on YouTube, and it is fantastic. What are you looking at?
I looked up Countdown to Destruction on Google Images and found this great photo
where they've circled Ashley the Yellow in Space Ranger's breasts.
For no apparent reason.
I just saw the reason.
Reasons.
Yeah.
But I like to think they did it for no reason.
Let's go on that. Because I'm a gentleman, I wouldn't do that myself.
Right.
As you know. That's the chick who played Astronema.
Okay.
She's pretty. Astronema, what the fuck is that?
I don't know, weird pineapple
monster. Is that a pineapple monster?
Yeah.
This is the strangest thing that's ever happened. Nick, let's kind of get close to rounding this out, because this has kind of gone every which way.
Yeah.
Everything but Turbo, but I feel like it's going to suffice. So I guess, Nick, it's time to go down to this. Favorite moments. You asked me, but I really... I'll start answering. I'll go first, since you asked me a long time ago.
Okay.
Favorite moments in this movie. I love the shot we had to rewind.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Bulk and Skull. They were such underrated characters. I love Jason Darby and Paul Schreier. I wish they were in more things.
Right.
Like, when I first was getting close to going to college and was going to, go into film, which just, gone by the wayside at this point, but... I honestly, one of my goals was to cast Jason Darby and Paul Schreier in something. Not as Bulk and Skull, but just like put them together again.
Right.
Because I'm not saying this in like a literal, I don't know how to say this without coming off like, this guy has no right to say this. Bruh. I think Bulk and Skull should be considered like within the pantheon of like great comedy duos. I really do, because this movie is not a good example, but
no, it isn't.
But a lot of times on the show they were genuinely funny. There was actually a time leading into a story I was going to tell you about earlier, a couple of years ago. I think it was 2008, perfectly two years ago exactly. They had the first Power Rangers convention, Power Morphicon. I may have told you about this, and they had panels with various people from like all the different casts, but they had a specific Bulk and Skull panel with Jason Darby and Paul Schreier, and I watched a lot of it on YouTube, and they're just great dudes. They're just good fellas, Not good fellas, they're good fellas,
Right.
but, they're just a delight, and they make no bones about the fact that this is like the most ridiculous show that has ever existed, and they had fun with it. They directed a number of the American portions of the episodes we saw, they got into the business, really enjoyed being part of this family of production, and they got really into it. But they were talking about how there was a brief period of time where there was going to be a Bulk and Skull spinoff that was just like a slapstick comedy show, like in the vein of Three Stooges. Which I kind of would have dug if they'd just done it. I want to say this about early 90s children's television. Power Rangers, as ridiculous as it may be, so much ballsier and so much more I feel creative and so much more just fun than the crap they churn out. Saturday morning, there's no reason to wake up on Saturday morning anymore. There really isn't. I know we're, you're 24 and I'm 23, but...
I'm 25, actually.
That's right, you are. You celebrated a birthday recently.
I did.
I wasn't paying attention. I feel bad about it.
It's all right.
I mean, I knew it happened. I just forgot.
Right.
I'm an ass. Anyway, but you know what I mean. I don't know if you've noticed, but, the majority of Saturday morning television these days is just, bad American anime.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've... There's only been one really good American anime show ever, which is Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
Which is a great show.
Right.
But that's over. So I don't know what there is to watch anymore.
Well, I mean, that was also on Nickelodeon any time of day, but I'm saying specifically Saturday morning.
Right.
That when we were kids, and this is something that, this went on for decades, and it's kind of died now, is that there was a magic to waking up on Saturday morning. There was a kitschy magic to waking up on Saturday morning if you were in your 20s. My oldest sister, Jennifer, I remember her getting up to watch cartoons with us when we were kids, and she was, graduating from high school and, moving on with her life, but she was still watching this stuff with us and enjoying the hell out of it. We don't even have that anymore. There's no such thing as a Saturday morning comedy cartoon show anymore. That doesn't exist. It's all American anime. Pokemon really fucked up our Saturday mornings. As much as we enjoyed it when it existed, it fucked up the entire idea of Saturday morning cartoons forever, and I kind of resent it for it.
Well, I was never really much of a... I don't remember watching that many Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah.
I watched cartoons, but it was more like in the afternoons after school.
Right, but I'm saying, like, there... But you remember, like, there was kind of a magic to the idea of
right.
Saturday morning. Like, it was just...
Saturday
this,
morning cartoons, yeah.
It was just... It was just this thing that everybody looked forward to. It was just this mythic thing. The kid loves Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist anymore. There's no point to get up. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would argue it's because there are 24-hour children's networks now.
Right.
You know, there's Disney and Nickelodeon. But at the same time, those still existed back then. I know they're more prominent now because, Christ, you know, Disney Channel owns like half of America's children's brains at this point.
Right.
But, God, I miss Saturday morning. This really has taken a very strange turn. And all that because I wanted to talk about Bulk turning, cocking his head, making smiling, and that noise coming out. All
right.
Meh! other favorite moments for me, as I continue to be long-winded, other favorite moments, well, I love the first shot of Malagor. I feel bad because this time it didn't do as much for me, but I did used to love the transformation sequence, and even you pointed out the ridiculousness of, oh, Tommy's the leader, so he gets the more fancy transformation sequence where the camera goes up on his helmet as it goes like in a side, like a spinning, you know, pan shot.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I agree, it's ridiculous. But there was something so magical about that, and the magic wasn't there today, you know. I know it's, I'm sure it's because I'm 23, and it's like, you know, it's weird because I realized, you know, a day has to come when my tastes in even kitsch has to grow up, you
right.
know, and that makes me sad because, you know, the vast majority of my ridiculous pop culture love comes from loving stuff that I, as a 23-year-old, probably shouldn't.
Right.
You know, watching the old movies I watched as a child, like, I love a good movie for someone of my age. At the current time, but you know, I love me a good kids movie from when I was a young man, and this was fun, but it just didn't hold the punch.
Right.
That being said, and I guess this does speak even more to my adult character now. I love when the movie gets fucking dark.
Does it?
It actually doesn't get as dark as I remembered. But
because you were like making a thing about how dark it was, like before we watched it, and I was
because
watching,
I
like,
remember
it's not dark.
I remembered it being darker. Like what I'm talking about specifically is the scene where they sacrifice Jason and Kimberly to like the lava to bring forth Malagor, and they come back up out of the smoke like possessed. You know, like I remember when that first came out in the theater. Like I mean, I wasn't like reacting or anything, but like. It was one of those stupid situations where parents react to something irrationally and it like ends up in the op-ed part of the newspaper, you know, like, you know, it's too dark and scared of kids, man. The worst thing, example of that, if I may go off on another bridge, I've ever seen of, you know, the misuse of op-ed for, you know, bullshit reasons. You know the movie Matilda?
I do.
It's a wonderful film.
I don't know if I ever saw it.
You should.
Like, I'm sure, I know I've seen parts of it, but I can't remember if I've seen all of it.
Have you ever read the book when you were
no.
a kid? Okay, well, I mean, it's a good movie. It's a great movie. Directed by Danny DeVito. He's in it. A lot of great people are in it. It's just a good movie.
Well, Roald Dahl is a great children's author.
It's true.
But, I mean, his stuff is very dark.
It is very dark. And I mean, Matilda doesn't pull many punches. But one of the key plot points of Matilda is that the villain is the principal of the school. Her name is Miss Trunchbull. And she has this... Like, it's kind of an Iron Maiden in her principal's office that when a kid is, you know, naughty, if you will, she punishes them, but puts them in this thing. It's called the Chokey, and it's this room that's got, like, shards of broken glass and nails poking out of the walls. But a kid can stand in there and not, you know, get impaled or anything. It's an Iron Maiden, you know, basically. But I remember when that movie came out, I was 10 years old when Matilda came out. And there was an op-ed piece in the newspaper where some woman was bitching about how her 11-year-old daughter had, you know, had decided that she didn't want to go to school anymore because Matilda had scared her because she thought that they had chokies in public school. And I'm like, listen, the public school system of my hometown is fucking awful. I mean, it gets worse by the day. In the elementary school system in my town, forget it. But in the middle schools, even worse. But I was 10 years old, and this girl was 11. I've seen the terrible things that happen in public school. And lady, they don't have chokies, you know. And I remember like my mom reading that to me, and I was like, "What? Are you fucking kidding me? How stupid is this kid? Like, I got, like, very angry. I have my entire life, I've never cottoned to stupid children. Even when I was one, right. I've always hated stupid children. And that's just been a thing. That being said, after another long-ass bridge, but I remember that there wasn't, like, an op-ed piece, but it was kind of, you know, going around the parents. It was like, oh, that Turbo, and possessed in darkness, and it's like the devil, and all of, everybody's like, it's too dark for kids, and I'm like, is it really? And now that I'm 23 watching it, I'm like, you know, no, it's not. It's actually, I mean, it's different. The idea of, like, demonic possession in Power Rangers, you know, and into the fire. Into the fire, which is my other favorite part. Because I don't know if you remember when I did this. I think I did it in one of our episodes long, long ago. But after after Jason and Kimberly have been possessed by the demon, there's a big, you know, fight where they're fighting off the Power Rangers. And at one point, Jason is holding Tommy, like, over the edge of the lava pit. And he's, like, holding him by the throat. And, like, he's going to try to push him in. And you just see Kimberly with her glowing red eyes over in the corner. And she's just like, into the fire. Into the fire. Into the fire. And I love that because it's just, like, so fucked up. And then Malagor arises and the movie keeps going. I feel burnout. Nick, what are your favorite moments?
Everything after they became Power Rangers.
It's true.
I feel like the only time that movie captured the excitement of Power Rangers is gasp when they're Power Rangers.
It's true. There's a lot of time spent out of suit in this movie.
And it just bored me. Like, the parts where they're out of suit. Like, it was... Actually, that's kind of wrong. I wasn't bored because I was so often just struck by how strange it was and, like, how bad it was. Like, I was always concentrating on how bad it was, but, like, the movie didn't take off for me until the last 20 minutes, and then it ended. I'm like, oh, I had to watch an hour and 10 minutes before the last 20 minutes.
The battle with Malagor was like 30 seconds. Is that your only favorite moment?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad about this now. Like I said, right. I feel bad. It's like, I feel like that. It's like the episode of Seinfeld where he goes to return like that suit jacket, and they're like, you know, and why? For spite! And they're like, sir, you can't return a suit for spite. And like, let me get my manager. They come back and they pull the manager back, and he's like, you know, he's like, yes, but you want to return this jacket? Yes, I want to return this, this jacket. He's like, okay, I'm sorry, we can't take it for spite. He's like, all right, it doesn't fit me. And he's like, well, you already said it was for spite. You know, I feel like that's kind of what happened here. I feel like I made an episode completely out of spite, and I feel bad about it. I mean, like I said, this is a movie that, I mean, it charmed me as a kid, and I had good times with it when I was a young man. But yeah, I guess it doesn't hold up, but it was a fun chat. I got to be a nerd for a minute, you know, about Power Rangers. I mean, I could go off for hours. And I feel like I did this once with you when we used to live together, talking about, like, the long mythology of Power Rangers.
I'm sure you did, yeah.
I think that conversation with you all those years ago was what led me to start writing that spec treatment about the modernized version of the show. But I do love... I love the franchise. But yeah, this is definitely, like, the weakest origin story of any of the iterations, and it is what it is. It is what it is! Bam, bam, bam. It was what it was! They used to... There used to be these dancers on Late Night with Conan O'Brien called the It Is What It Is dancers.
Yeah.
And they would just come out and dance to this song that was like, it is what it is! Boom, da, boom, boom. And then, like, they would stand there for a second, and then Conan O'Brien would be like, And that was the It Was What It Was dancers, and they just go back and they're like, it was what it was, and they back into the curtain like it. You had to be there. Conan's coming back.
He is.
I know, I'm sure we're going to talk about it in the episode that precedes this, which we haven't recorded yet, because that's how podcasting works. Isn't it fucked up? But Conan's coming back. As of this episode's airing, he will have been back on the air for a week.
Nice.
You remember all the drama?
I do.
We'll probably talk about, you know, my joy a bit more in episode 63.
Yes.
Which we still have yet to record. The magic of podcasting, Nick.
This show can get very meta sometimes.
It really fucking can. And we do it a hell of a lot better than Community, which we did talk about in the episode. Let's stop recording this
okay.
And do something else. Okay, Nick, final thoughts on Turbo, a Power Rangers movie, which was also once referred to as Turbo, a Power Rangers Adventure, but they just changed it to movies.
It's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure kids will probably get a kick out of it. I mean, it's like,
I don't think kids today would get a kick out of it.
Well,
Power Rangers is
the awesome kids of our generation.
Yes, yes. Power Rangers is kind of irrelevant at this point, even though it kind of still exists. It's not very relevant in America anymore.
Well, it should be.
It should be. I agree.
Because it was a big part of my childhood.
Mine as well. But you were saying final thoughts.
Yeah, man, I have nothing to say.
Okay.
Larigo is creepy.
Larigo is creepy as hell. my final thoughts, yeah, it didn't hold up the way I expected it to. I mean, I expected to be, like, having a laugh a minute, pointing out stuff and, like, you know, nerding out about certain things and just remembering the good times. But it was, you know, it was just kind of a bland experience. And it just, yeah, it just served to remind me, like, that the Turbo was the weakest conceit of the different iterations. Like, it just, the origin, like I said, the fact that they create their own powers in this one, horseshit. You know, Zordon is God, sir! If we could make a metaphor, Zordon is God, and, you know, Dark Spectre is the devil, and Divatox is yummy. She is yummy. I'm not gonna dispute it. Astronema is adorable. That was in space. You're loving this thing I'm doing.
Yeah.
We're going to stop. Anyway, yeah. That's my final thoughts. Yeah, it just didn't hold up as much as it. But we had a kind of disjointed but fairly fun chat about it. Mm. Turbo, a Power Rangers movie. The best, worst movie of all time. That's that.
It is.
That certainly fell to the floor with a thud at the end of that episode. Well, how about it? You want to record an episode that's going to go up before this one and
yes.
To do a little time traveling?
Yes.
That's crazy pants. All right, that's about it. That wraps her up. That give Sam Elliott a sarsaparilla. It's done.
Okay.
That's the OUP for this week. I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Go experience 7 days. Good night.
I was going to do that. Lead me to it.
Good night. We've done that one.
Have we?
Yeah.
I figured.
There was a day when I was obsessed with coffee cans and...